Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are Canada's video game radio show, and we are here on 92.9 Kick FM. It is Winnipeg's indie station, and I am Mike the Legend. Yes, I'm he is me, we are one. Here with you for Friday, March 16th of the year 2012. So nice of you to join us once again, as we are so glad we can be here with you, bringing you all the latest, greatest, and some oddities from the world of video games, electronic entertainment, and really just anything else that tickles our fancy.
Indeed. See, I see you after the left me open for introducing myself there.
I kind of did, didn't I?
Yes, I am Dennis. This week, I am the Stick of Butter Half Cup.
Ooh, is that some sort of new avant-garde poem?
It is.
That you've developed at some sort of slam poetry session. Well, afterwards, everyone snapped.
Yes, and I played the bongos while doing it, too.
Getting in touch with that inner beatnik we've always known you have deep down inside.
Indeed, but actually, more correctly, it's a very interesting, mistake, I think, that someone happened upon on a website I like to frequent as a programmer, but anyone who has an interest in computers and information technology should maybe consider browsing it once or twice. It's called the dailywtf.com. If you type stick of butter half cup into Google, you'll get a very interesting result, which... And by interesting result, I mean a Google calculator result. Because, yes. You know, when you type a calculation into the Google search bar, and now, like you have been able to for a couple of years, a Google calculator result will pop up, usually. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very useful tool for, like, especially complex equations, if you're kind of in a pinch, when you need to maybe devise some sort of amortization schedule or something in accounting class, and you left your calculator at home. Just for example.
As an example, or say, converting units of measurement, yes, one into the other.
It's, what have you. Very useful for that. But when you type in stick of butter half cup, what comes out is one U.S. stick of butter, then in brackets, half U.S. cup equals 1.3993494 times 10 to the negative 8 meters to the power of 6.
Oh.
Which really doesn't make any sense.
Well, that doesn't tell me how much butter I need.
yes. But, yeah, it was a... It kind of just went... Took its rounds over the internet the last couple days here, after it was posted on the Daily WTF. Mm-hmm. And it made its way to PopSci.com, where the top comment... Or the first comment by a person named Tsen, T-S-E-N, made a very interesting comment where he rationalized it, or they rationalized it, I don't know if it's a he or she, but they rationalized it, saying, in case it wasn't clear, it's just multiplying the two quantities, U.S. stick of butter and half U.S. cup, which are equal volumes, the result of which multiplication is naturally the six-dimensional square of a half cup. Sort of makes sense if you think about it from a mathematical standpoint, sort of. I'm not really a mathematician, so I'll just have to kind of take the person's word for it.
You're making that leap of faith.
Yes, but it sort of makes sense. But they continue with saying, of course, the fact that there's a perfectly logical explanation for this is just an immutable fact that he's stating for the record. It doesn't mean that mysterious quantum butter math is what isn't taking place here, as the title of the PopSci article is, Has Google Discovered Dark Butter? And I just thought this was an interesting thing that our listeners may like to listen to, or like to hear, because, you know, we're interested in the nerdier kind of things here on the arcade.
Indeed, indeed. And it's always funny anytime you see some sort of quirk with Google arise, because you know it's going to be good.
Yes. I mean, there's the Google, there's their Easter eggs that they hide in, mm-hmm. And this might be one of them, where it's like, let's just tell the throw up the calculator when someone searches for a half stick of butter or something. And I mean, this could be it, but I actually genuinely think this is a mistake. And mistakes are so much better when you find them, because they're usually huge. Because it wouldn't just be something small. No.
It would be something huge.
The small ones aren't interesting.
No, I mean, the small ones aren't interesting. I mean, like, oh, look at the formatting on this page. It's a little bit off. No, no, no. Saying a stick of butter times a half a cup being a big crazy meters to the power of six, that's not in our current three dimensions. I mean, all we can go by definition is cubed. That's by definition all you can do mathematically in our current confines of our universe.
This is true.
Reality. So it's very interesting thinking of something as meters to the power of six, which doesn't really make any sense.
I would now like to see some scientific research teams out there take up this challenge and see what exactly happens when they multiply a stick of butter by half cup, and if they are able to engage in multidimensional butter mathematics.
And the cake that would be made would be probably out of this world. Oh, I apologize for that.
That was terrible. really terrible.
It was among one of the worst things I think I've said in a while, that's for sure. Not offensive, just really stupid.
You know what? I give you points. That was impressively stupid. You know what? If you're going to go big, you got to go big. And you did. And it's very commendable. I respect that.
And it's not a bad start to this show.
Certainly not. I mean, anytime we can discuss some potential errors, flaws in Google's programming that relate to butter, I think it's a good way to start the day. And just really anything butter-related.
Yes, as it butters up the rest of the show. Ooh.
Okay, we are now on the slippery slope. Are we?
Oh, hey-o.
Where's a gong when you need it? There's never a gong around anywhere.
Well, Johnny! Sorry, that was... I think this is as good a time as any to ease ourselves into the ludicrous leadoffs.
Yes, in theory, the butter story could have been a ludicrous leadoff, but instead, nay, we have found two more news stories, items that have come across our various wires. That's our more interesting and just more ridiculous than the great Google butter escapade of 2012.
Indeed.
The first one takes us to the land of the rising sun, and you may recall last year it was that we spoke about not just a Japanese plan, but a Japanese Pizza Hut plan.
Was it Pizza Hut or was it Domino's? Let's just say it was Pizza Hut, for the sake of argument, and without going back through our records, which you can actually find on our website, thearcadeshow.com, and correct us for yourself by sending us an email at thearcade@kick.fm.
Indeed, you have some homework to do, listeners.
Yes, prove us wrong. Well, for the sake of argument right now, we'll say it was Pizza Hut.
It was one of them. You know, it was relating to the great, you know, Japanese pizza advertising war of 2011.
Yes.
Which apparently was a thing.
And it got really out of hand.
To the point where one of them declared that they were going to just make a moon base that would have the first ever non-Earth-based pizza chain or pizza outlet. And they had a great plan. They had, you know, how much it was going to cost and blah, 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 and projection dates, even though it was just no hope of ever it coming to fruition. But that was the press release they put out, that they were going to build a moon base. Still none yet.
No.
But they might be running into a problem of just how do they get there? What's the best way to get there? And to help them, there's a Japanese construction company that is working on perhaps an easier way of getting to the moon by making a space elevator.
Yes, though I don't think it's explicitly stated that they are actually in cahoots with this pizza company. I think they're just making the space elevator for the sake of making the space elevator.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But I like to draw the connection between the two dots.
Yes, and
even though it might be all around the place, like some, you know, family circle or family circus cartoon, excuse me.
Yes, like the Billy chasing whatever.
Yes.
Or going to go down the street, but instead traipses all around the neighborhood.
Taking the most circuitous path possible between two straight points.
Yes.
That's what I like to do with this.
Indeed.
But space elevator.
Yes.
Again, we don't know if there's a direct link between the two, but I choose to believe there is. And according to the Daily Yomiuri, Japanese news outlet, the construction company Obayashi Corp. has announced that they intend to have a space elevator built that's capable of shuttling passengers 36,000 kilometers above the Earth by the year 2050.
Yes, now, this distance is only about a quarter of the distance between Earth and the Moon. But still, it's into outer space.
It's a good start.
It's in outer space. So the idea behind this is that you will basically be able to go into outer space through a carbon nanotube, which is 20 times stronger than steel, or through some sort of tube where this elevator is pulled by carbon nanotube, which is 20 times more powerful than steel.
Indeed.
And these cables being stretched out to a counterweight 96,000 kilometers above the planet, which is about... Sorry, that one is about one-fourth the distance between Earth and the Moon. But still, 36,000 kilometers is way up there.
You're, you pretty much can't see your house at that point if you look down. Actually, you know what? You probably don't want to look down.
No.
I'd recommend not.
But it ends off at a terminal station... Again, 36,000 kilometers above Earth, which will be reached by cars that can carry 30 people and travel 200 kilometers per hour. An official from Obayashi said, "At this moment, we cannot estimate the cost of the project. However, we'll try to make steady progress so that it won't end up just simply being a dream," which might be the most ridiculous quote I've ever heard from an official from a company. Who cares about the cost? Let's just do it anyways, is what they're saying.
You know what? To hell with our business plan. To hell with profitability. To hell with sustainability. We're just little boys with dreams. We look up from our yards into the night sky, gaze upon the stars, and can't help but feel that we want to be closer to the great everlasting space existence. They want to be a part of that.
Yes, and they want to drive cars that go 200 kilometers an hour, 36,000 kilometers up in the air.
Well, I'm hoping they aren't actually driving, you know, automobiles as we know them. I'm hoping maybe it's just some sort of weird, you know, elevator-type car.
Or a future car. Or a back-to-the-future car.
Hey!
Hey!
Even better.
Yes.
Now, by that point, once you reach the, you know, a platform at the end of this elevator line... presumably, you'd be, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump to the Moon because, hey, you've broken away from Earth's gravity.
Yes, now you just jump.
Get a good running start.
Get a good running start, jump, and then you'll probably die. Because because once you get sucked into the gravity of the Moon, you're more than likely going to plummet to your death. But that's just my thought. I'm not a scientist or anything, but... I understand how gravity works, even lesser gravity than Earth's.
This is true. You know, it'll act on you merely a third of what it would on Earth, so you have that maybe working in your favor.
That is even if you get there, though, considering that's a good, what, 500,000 kilometers away still?
It's a bit of a distance, you know, it's not an overnight drive.
It might not even just be a single running jump. That, I'm just saying.
Or hopefully by this point, once the platform at the end of this space elevator has been constructed, we have space taxis that will shuttle you to and fro.
Or something like an antimatter drive spaceship, much like the Enterprise. You know, that old thing on that old show, Star Trek?
Ah, yes, that one. Or we've really learned how to harness the power of dilithium crystals.
Yes. Indeed.
Perhaps even ion propulsion. Or perhaps we don't move so much as we devise a propulsion system that moves space around us.
Yes.
Hey.
Using an antimatter-based warp core. Yes.
That's what you think.
That's what they said repeatedly on the show.
No. I think that's all a lie.
Okay. Well, Mike the Legend clearly has his own ideas about things today.
I reject your reality and wish to substitute my own.
Yes.
I defy you to tell me otherwise.
Well, even if you can't do that, maybe this next ludicrous lead-off will lead you one step towards doing that, where you may substitute your own voice into other means.
Yes.
Instead of your whole reality. Maybe you were the one who said the Abe Lincoln speech, and you just want to hear how yourself hear how you would say it without actually saying it and recording it and doing all that whole pain in the butt stuff.
Well, what I kind of think this second Ludicrous Sidoroff is kind of a bit of a tie-in and a bit of a small continuation to the one we had last week of the computer program that had reached an IQ level of 150. Not only are computer programs and now software becoming smart, not only are we aware that they can, you know, speak, computer programs have been able to recite back, you know, words and phrases and whole dictations, for a while now in a very robotic-y voice.
Yes.
It sounds close, but it's always slightly off. But, you know, in certain languages, but now, this one's really neat. A piece of software will be able to translate your voice into another language. I'm assuming this will be part of the robo-apocalypse, at some point.
Yes.
By mimicking human speech and just relaying it back to us in different languages to confuse us all.
Yes, that's the confusing part about this. If you wanted to hear how you would say something in, oh, I don't know, if you don't speak German, maybe saying something in German. I mean, we've all Google translated things before.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, I'm sure we've heard, you know, the little playback button. It's like, oh, play this, then it comes back in some robotic computer voice. But what would it sound like as your voice? You can't speak German, but the computer can make it sound like you can.
This is true. And that's kind of the one of the interesting uses of this piece of software that has been developed by, of all places, Microsoft.
Yes. Microsoft. they demonstrated this at their Redmond, Washington campus. Earlier this month. The scientist there, who works for Microsoft, whose name is Frank Soong, he showed how his software could read out text in Spanish using the voice of his boss, Rick Rashid, who leads Microsoft's research efforts. And in a second demonstration, Soong used his software to grant Craig Mundy, Microsoft's chief research and strategy officer, the ability to speak Mandarin, which I'm assuming he doesn't normally do.
Well, it wouldn't be that impressive if he did already. At that point, it's just kind of playing back his voice, you know, after recording it.
Yes. Wow.
Recording directly what he said and then playing it back.
It's a good job, pal. That's not impressive at all. But,
but you're really cheating the system here.
Yes.
But nevertheless, now how this went was that in English, there was a synthetic version of Mr. Moody's voice that was played, and it welcomed the audience of attendees, the journalists, to the open day that was held by Microsoft Research, and concluded by saying, quote, "With the help of this system, now I can speak Mandarin." That phrase was then repeated in Mandarin Chinese, which was still, apparently, recognizably Mr. Mundy's voice. Which is interesting. Somewhat creepy.
Yes.
Somewhat creepy. Now, the quote here from research scientist Frank Soong says, quote, "We'll be able to do quite a few scenario applications." I guess they intend this to be, you know, have a much more widespread use than, I don't know, Robo-Apocalypse, which is what I'm always going to come back to.
Yes. Skynet.
Yes, exactly, Skynet. So it doesn't just eliminate the English-speaking countries. It can eliminate all of them.
Yes.
By learning their language.
By learning their language, I would assume taking the skin of the inhabitants of the country to use in some sort of weird robot man suit to try to blend in with those that haven't been assimilated yet.
Naturally, of course, you know, to gain the trust of the other people as they go along through society and further enslaving everybody as they go.
Or just murdering them and replacing them with robot versions of themselves. Again, using the skin.
Of course. I mean, you don't want to let it go to waste. He goes on to say, quote, "For a monolingual speaker traveling in a foreign country, we'll do speech recognition followed by translation, followed by the final text to speech output in a different language, but still in the person's own voice," which that strikes me as being the coolest application.
Yes.
Because if you've ever done any traveling abroad in, say, oh, I don't know, Europe, or just anywhere that is not an English-speaking country, or more generally, in a country where the spoken language is not your first language.
Yes.
Or any language you know. That's kind of an unnerving feeling.
Yes. I mean, if you've ever had to order, let's say, a hamburger at a German hole in the wall, it's very difficult once you realize that this one place is, you know, the one out of 10 places you've been to where the person inside doesn't speak any English. I mean, normally, well, I found that a lot of people over there spoke English.
Definitely.
But in the odd chance when they didn't, it was kind of interesting, where I would have to say, like, hold up four fingers and show the guy that one, four, that combo. Yeah, I'll just have that, please. And then he says something else, and I nod my head, and then I realized I agreed to getting mayonnaise put all over my French fries.
Awesome.
Which I was not expecting and didn't really want. But, and I'd say I learned my lesson, but I don't know what that lesson was, because I can't speak German. So this tool would have been incredible at that time.
It would have been absolutely useful, be it for ordering hamburgers or,
other things.
Anything else you need in Europe, getting directions primarily.
Oh, yeah.
That would just be a godsend. Any occasion you can think of where you would need to actually connect with people and get over the language barrier, this is really where it's going to come in handy. And apparently how this works is that the system that they've developed needs about an hour of training to develop a model that's able to read out any text in a person's own voice. So I'm assuming during that hour, you're pretty much going through reading a bunch of presented words and phrases so it can learn your pattern.
And just basically record and cut up different phrases and different sounds and syllables and stuff from using your voice and your tone of voice, and it probably says, say this surprised, or say this very unimpressed, or something like that, I would assume. I mean, because if it wants to mimic it perfectly, it would probably have to try to get inflection in there too, and that's, unless that doesn't cover that yet, and I'm just overthinking it, which is also entirely possible.
Entirely possible.
but just based on how complicated it already sounds, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Now, from there, the model that it develops after the hour of you talking to the system is then converted into one able to read out text, or is converted into able to read out text in another language by comparing it with a stock text-to-speech model for the target language. Individual sounds used by the first model to build up words using a person's voice in his or her own language are then carefully tweaked to give the new text-to-speech model a full ability to sound out phrases in the second language. So interesting that it's basically takes yours, learns from it, and will then fill in basically the holes with a pre-made or standard model, I should say, of language.
Yes. Very interesting stuff. I mean, it sort of reminds me of another Microsoft project that came out a couple years ago called Songsmith, which I think we may have even talked about on this program.
Oh, probably did.
How it was the one where you record you singing something, and then Microsoft plays back your singing with accompaniment it came up with. Just, I guess, using just general piano sounds or what have you, but it would just play chords.
Interesting.
That sort of match up with the note you're singing. And it was neat. I mean, the demo videos I saw were kind of, they were a little bit painful to watch, but they were, it's still an interesting idea. And that one wasn't quite as practical as this, though. This one, I think, is actually really useful, especially for someone who might be overseas a lot on business or something like that. I mean, if anything else, it's a cool tool to just kind of show off to someone foreign and, it's a connection point, if anything else. Like, we don't speak each other's language, but let's play with this toy and figure out things and, hey, I can sort of understand you now, and you can sort of understand me. Perfect. Cool.
Foreign students, I think, would be prime candidates for this this bit of technology, as Frank Sung, again, one of the researchers on this project, says that the approach they're taking this with this technology will allow the software to convert between any pair of 26 languages, including Mandarin Chinese, Spanish, and Italian. And I'm assuming other ones, Russian, German, Newfoundlander, You know,
yes.
Any of that kind of thing. But again, it's still in the developmental stages. There's no sort of alpha test even release date given yet, no beta test at all, or any sort of projected release date for this piece of software, let alone any platform it might work on. But you got to think with, I guess, the convenience that this piece of software would give, you might want that on, say, oh, I don't know, a smartphone?
Yeah.
So you can just always have it with you in, say, well, the example you gave, trying to order a hamburger.
Yes, well, the I think the only sort of unfortunate part about this is I could see it only being on the Windows phones. And, yeah, I think I know one person with a Windows phone. I don't know if they're happy with it, but most people I know who've played with Windows phones don't really like them.
Hmm.
I tried the demo. It seemed kind of weird to me. But that's just me being a phone snob.
Oh,
I apologize.
One of those. One of those. But a very interesting piece of technology and just where we're moving forward. And I can only imagine that we are inching ever closer towards the day where all it takes is just a chip, maybe on your tongue or some sort of apparatus you put in your mouth, and then you can just speak in another language and be understood.
Or the opposite approach, much like the Hitchhiker's Guide, where you put the babblefish in your ear and
yes,
and you can just understand anything.
Interesting as well.
I like that one as well.
or as early Simpsons would depict, all it takes is some sort of pill or candy, and you can instantly start speaking French.
Yes.
As I am going back to early Simpsons, the episode where Bart is the foreign exchange student in France. And
is abused by
the winemaking
winemaking French duo that took him in and
essentially treated as child labor, and you know, he escapes, he starts telling his tale to some, you know, French police officer who of course doesn't understand him because Bart only knows English. And then gives him a candy. And Bart can speak French.
Yes.
No explanation.
Yes, unless it was just sort of like that was the moment when it clicked and he finally understood French. But I don't know. It's one of those weird with Simpsons things.
Reading far too much into it.
Yes, but yes, the candy that makes you understand things.
I really hope we have that one day.
Yes.
You'd think the Wonka Corporation would have come out with that by now.
Yeah, they came out with all sorts of weird things, like an everlasting gobstopper. How can it be so everlasting? I just don't understand.
I will refute that everlastingness until the day I die. I refuse to believe that it exists.
As you very well should, as I was being sarcastic.
Sarcasm. But we'll move right along and leave the ludicrous lead-offs behind, although if we were so daring, we could even venture into the third ludicrous leadoff territory with this next news item, though we will not.
We won't, because it is legitimate news, and it's top news in the video game world, in my opinion, or it has been for the past, like, week or so, 2 weeks, even.
It's certainly up there. If you'll recall, it was last month when Tim Schafer took to the internet seeking funding for a passion project of his. And he took to it through the form of Kickstarter.
Yes, the basically, Kickstarter is a fundraising website where you just put a project up there that you want to happen and hope people also agree with you. And when they agree with you, they pledge money.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a PBS pledge drive as well.
It pretty much is. And it can also be part, you know, crowdsourced venture capitalism in a way.
Yes.
I think is how I described it. Yeah, you give a little description, maybe even if you are able to, some you know, preliminary art of whatever it is you're doing, or some way of depicting and accurately conveying to the internet public what the hell it is you're trying to do. And actually, on that note, I just want to point out briefly that I did find another website similar to Kickstarter called petridish.org. It's pretty much Kickstarter, but for scientific research projects.
Yes, I believe I remember hearing about that one before as well. Very interesting ideas. I mean, crowdsourcing is pretty much all the rage these days on the internet with the advent of social networking and basically taking the social networking model and applying it to all sorts of different things. As we've talked about in the past, crowdsourcing people for scientific puzzle solving in the form of folding at home.
Yes, certainly so. You can pretty much crowdsource anything these days.
Yes, it's like, in a way, it's almost like making things into a game as well, because, you know, you do this enough, and you do this, and then this happens. It's like, oh, okay. I mean, it adds kind of like bragging rights, because things become public, and, you know, hey, I donated this much to this thing, and I get to do this and this. What did you do kind of thing with this, the Kickstarter kind of model as well? I mean, there's a number of different reasons for wanting to donate to these things, but whatever they are, Tim Schafer's he's the king. He's the absolute king of Kickstarter now.
He is the crown king of Kickstarter, because his project was seeking, well, when it started, it was seeking a mere $400,000.
Well, it was a pretty big sum, everyone thought.
Well, exactly. I mean,
$400,000 is definitely nothing to sneeze at, but that's what Tim Schafer needs to make a game, I guess.
Yes,
like a passion project style game.
Yes, and we should actually backtrack it here a minute. It's what he was trying to do, and what he was hoping to do, was raise $400,000 so that his studio could make Double Fine Adventure, which he wants to be and envisions to be an old school point and click PC adventure game, much like, you know, the kind he used to make when he, you know, worked at LucasArts back in the day, and he wanted to be at least for the PC and maybe hopefully in the great utopian future on multiple platforms. But he just again started a vision of 400,000, and probably 400,000 was probably just the amount that they thought, you know what, we can do with just this much. If we strip off the bells and whistles, we can get by with this much. Because with Kickstarter, you really don't know how it's going to go. And it can either go not so well, or it can go the Tim Schafer way.
Yes.
And
when you're Tim Schafer, things go the Tim Schafer way. Apparently. Now, the last time we talked about this, we were sitting at something like, what, $2.3 or $2.4 million, which is what he had raised up to that point.
Yes, and I think that was just not long. It was probably maybe roughly a week into when the thing had started.
Yes.
Just a mere few days, and he had 3 weeks to go after that point. And it was notable at that time because, again, the aim was $400,000, and he gave himself probably about 3-4 weeks to do it in, and he made it within a day.
Yeah, he made the $400,000, I think within 8 hours is what it was.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
It was like super record shattering, like most amount of money raised in an 8-hour period, for sure. And then he just kept breaking records, and all of a sudden it became the most well-funded Kickstarter, I think, of all time.
I do believe it was,
The number kept raising, and since then it has closed, but it closed at a spectacular number.
And, of course, as they, you know, cross the $400,000 threshold, the game will, you know, the project will go forward, and as a result of breaking that $400,000 plateau, Tim Schafer has said he'll be able to release it on multiple platforms, PC, Mac, Linux, iOS, certain Android devices. They'll be able to have more features, you know, voice acting, a bit more spit and polish, because they didn't just raise $400,000, they didn't just stop at, or the internet didn't just stop at 2.3 or 2.4 million. Instead, the internet went crazy, and when all the dust had settled, when the Kickstarter had come to a close, the Tim Schafer Double Fine Kickstarter project did raise a grand total of $3,336,371. Again, $3,336,371. And their aim was $400,000.
Yes. The internet pretty much just rules sometimes. When it comes to, like, picking up cool projects and, like, just interesting things, like, this is a clear message that there is a market for this kind of thing, I think. Not a very big market, mind you, but enough of a market. And this is exactly the perfect, like, I said it at the time when we first talked about the story, and I'll say it again. These kind of projects basically should not go through a big publisher. Because it'll water them down, and there'll be too many people who don't have any sort of, like, passion for the project attached to it. I mean, if he went through EA Sport or EA Games or anything like mm-hmm. that, or Activision or any of the other big companies who would have traditionally funded a game like this to get it published, they would have had too many things like, oh, you got to do this, or you got to do that, or well, you can't do this because of X, Y, and Z.
Try and make it so it can appeal to the broadest market possible.
Yeah. But with a game like this, it's like he just wants to make it basically for himself and for anyone who might have wanted an old-school-style Tim Schafer game. And he basically won. And all those people will... Well, I mean... I think even at the lowest level of Kickstarter projects like that, you do get some sort of copy of the game or what have you. Unless you were just like the lowest level, then you'll probably buy your own copy of the game. But yeah, you're pretty much guaranteed a bunch of sales. Not like, maybe not chart topper status, but you never know. But this is a nice clear sign that there is a way for people to get quality games of the style that they want.
It just has to take a non-traditional means to do so. And
now, granted, there is the little caveat, though, like where someone like Tim Schafer has to kind of lend their name to it.
And I think that's really part of what helped this grow to such a ridiculous, success, is that Tim Schafer just has such a great, you know, name cachet within the video game industry.
Yeah, he's not just some guy just starting out making games, or he hasn't had to spend a bunch of time building up his indie project like mm-hmm. Mojang with Minecraft or anything like that. Even though they probably would be able to do something like this now, mm-hmm. when they first started Minecraft, they wouldn't be able to do that.
No.
Because no one knew what it was.
And Tim Schafer has such a well-respected resume with a great number of titles under his belt that people are fans of, and that gives him the credibility to approach the internet public and say, hey, I'd like to make this. And people can look back at his past and say, okay, well, he's done this. All right, I trust him. Here's my, you know... minimum $15. All right, go ahead. Whereas, again, if you said, and there's actually a Kickstarter out there for some guy in the States, he's seeking $1.1 million to make a video game. He has no experience in the field of video game development whatsoever, but apparently he has an idea to make a ridiculous, epic, open world game. Platforms, ideas, concept art, doesn't have any of those. The kicker is, the guy won the lottery. He won about $42 million in one of those state lotteries in America land, and he's going to the internet public and saying, hey, help me fund this. No experience, no credibility, nothing whatsoever to, I guess... help persuade people to part with their hard-earned dollars.
Yes.
And it doesn't help that he's a lottery winner.
Yeah, one who won something like $40 million.
Yep.
Now,
that's not going to get your Kickstarter funded.
No, as a person who has played video games for the majority of his life, if I was given the choice between that guy and Tim Schafer for the exact same project,
mm-hmm.
it's like this guy goes, yeah, I want to make this... old school kind of game that, you know, should appeal to people or whatever, but, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing, and that all I know is I sort of want a game sort of like this. Or Tim Schafer going, yeah, remember when I worked for, like, you know,
LucasArts
and made all those crazy old school games that were critically acclaimed? I want to make another one of those. I'm going to say, yeah, I think Tim Schafer deserves the money a bit more. I mean, even if Tim Schafer is also, like, a multimillionaire, which he probably is, or even if he's not, doesn't matter.
No.
The money aspect doesn't matter. I'm going to give it to the guy who will more than likely do it properly. Now, the fact that the money comes into it and the guy goes, yeah, I just won the lottery and I don't have to work another day in my life. But I still want $1 million from everyone else just to do something that I'll probably bungle.
See, that itself doesn't really help the guy's cause, because at that point, it comes off to me as being disingenuous. When I can look upon it, and I'm sure as you can as well, and everybody else can, and say, fund the damn thing yourself.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to get it to work, whereas with Tim Schafer, and as well, given his pedigree, and the fact that he gave a good description and conveyed what he wanted the project to be, he came across more as a passion project and something you can emotionally connect to as well.
And it almost seems like even if he didn't put a Kickstarter up, even if the Kickstarter wasn't even part of it, it almost sounds like something he probably would have just started on his own regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like, Robert Rodriguez filming his demo for Sin City.
Yes.
On his own dime, getting his, paying actors and, doing all the stuff himself just to impress
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller. When, back when that was still relevant.
Back when Frank Miller just really didn't want to part with the rights to do a Sin City movie because he thought no one could do it correctly, as it should be done.
Yes.
And yet, Robert Rodriguez showed that he had the passion for it.
Yes, by funding it all himself. I think it cost him something like $400,000 as well.
Yeah, did it in his own studio. He arranged everything himself just to impress Frank Miller.
Yes, but the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Would this guy who just won $40 million saying, I want to make a crazy movie about this comic book. I've never made movies before, but please give me this much money. Or Robert Rodriguez, who's like, yeah, I've made all these crazy movies already. That, a bunch of them are already cult classics, and I want to make this movie in the style of the comic book. This comic book. I want to make it exactly like the comic book. Look at the past movies I've made. I can probably do this. I'm going to go, yeah, I think I'll give Robert Rodriguez money instead. Like, it's the exact same thing.
Who has the better chance of actually making this come to life and, be awesome? The guy who, has no backing to support him and just kind of claims he's the idea man, as the lottery winner who wants the $1.1 million on his Kickstarter claims that he's the idea man. He just comes up with the ideas. He knows what he likes. He's been playing games all his life, and he knows what other people like just by talking to him and blah, blah, blah. But, that's not really going to work for him. He perhaps maybe doesn't understand how the internet works or how Kickstarter works or how to, persuade people to part with their dollars instead of just, give me your money.
Yeah, like, he didn't say anything like, I contacted Tim Schafer personally to make this game for me, and he told me that I need to do this and this. So here's my thing to you. I'm trying to do this and this. Let's get all this money together and whatever, just so we can get Tim Schafer to do this, or get other person to do this, or what have you. No, it was just, hey, I'm just going to try to do this myself. He's like, no. What are you doing? but that's another story.
That's an entirely different story for a different day. But yes, Tim Schafer and the Double Fine Adventure will be getting made in the future. Exact release date? Not really known yet. But then again, the game just got its funding, so they have to ramp up production on it and do everything that they need to make this game, given they have $3.3 million in the bank and, again, only needed $400,000. But whenever the game comes out, you can expect it to have one of the longest credit sequences ever in the history of video games.
Yes. Now, interestingly enough, there's a staggering number attached to the number of people who will be in the credits. Staggering number.
Yes, that would be... Well, anyone who donated to this cause, to this Kickstarter, does get their names in the credit sequence. Not anybody, but anyone who donated $100 or more gets in the credit sequence. Anything above, below that, you just got the game and maybe some art, but $100 and above, you're in the credits. So that makes it crazy enough. What's really crazy is that the $3.3 million mark was reached by... a grand total of over 87,000 people contributing to this project.
Yes. Now,
that's a soccer stadium.
Yes, it is.
just imagine that, everyone. A soccer stadium full of 87,000 people. Each one of them contributing a various amount to this cause.
Yes, at least $15 to, somewhere over $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
But... the credits alone will just cover the people who donate $100 or more. Which, even still, is a staggering number. Like, for game credits? For any credits, really. I mean, I've seen a lot of movies and everything with long credit sequences, but I don't think they have this many names in them.
No. I'm going to say not, and pretty sure the credit sequence with all these names will be probably an hour long.
Yeah, now, the reason why it'll be an hour long is because there were over 12,000 people who donated $100 or more to this cause.
12,000.
Over 12,000.
Over 12,000.
Now, granted, there was 11,530 people who donated $100 to just under $250. Now, from $250 to $10,000, there was about, well, I don't know, 1,000, give or take, 2,000, not 1,100, sorry, since 1,000 plus 100 is not 2,000.
Not quite. 1,100.
1,100, but yes.
And then you got into the crazy realms. There was 10 people who donated an amount of $5,000 or more. And as we joked about when this first came to light, the Kickstarter, last month, there was a $10,000 or more level where you'd get a tour of... Well, you got lunch with Tim Schafer, got a tour of the Double Fine Studios, you got all the art, you got everything up to that point, and, again, you got lunch with Tim Schafer, which, considering it's $10,000, Dammel better not be at the local burger joint.
Yeah, no kidding.
I want him making me something for, like, every day that week.
Yeah.
I want him to be my personal chef.
But yes.
I don't care if he can cook in his Pop-Tarts. That's what he's doing for 10 grand. So four people, there was only four of those $10,000 slots available. All four were purchased by the time this Kickstarter project was said and done. And even more intriguing, though, according to Kotaku, there was a shadowy premium backer, or backers, we don't know how many there were, but the game also received $100,000 in funding by unknown individuals.
Yes, but they said they were excluded from this list because they're the type of people that light cigars with $100 bills.
Makes sense to me.
So, probably CEOs of companies that just really didn't want to attach their names to it, but probably still wanted to see an old-school Tim Schafer game because, you know, they still love games despite the fact that they're at the top of a game company.
Who knows? Maybe even George Lucas himself.
Oh, that would be ridiculous.
That would have been ridiculous. The $15 price point was the most popular part of this Kickstarter, with just under 48,000 people contributing that amount, or... you know, just more than that, around 25,000 at the $30 level and just under 1,100 at the $60 level. So, $15, I mean, that is that at that price level, you were just pre-buying a copy of the game. And hey, why not? If you don't have the $10,000 to contribute. So,
but yeah, just pre-buying a copy of the game, that's still like 48,000 copies of the game automatically sold.
That's pretty damn good.
That's not bad.
For a game that's just a passion project, or at that point was a passion project, and is now so much more.
Yeah, well, I think it's still a passion project. I mean, 48,000 isn't in the millions.
No.
But to pre-sell just, like, a little project that much, that's awesome.
It is awesome, and I wonder if... you know, maybe Tim Schafer feels a bit of, I don't know, pressure and performance anxiety to with this game now. You know, or, I was going to make it this, but oh crap! Now I have it's taken on a new scale, if you will.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that this may even end up on like Xbox and PlayStation.
I can see it being online for those as well at some point.
Yeah, I mean.
Maybe not right away, but I can definitely see that down the line.
Yeah.
So only time will tell where Tim Schafer and his ridiculous Double Fine Kickstarter will go. All the roads they will take. But one other story we want to get to, as we spoke last week of a great many games given release dates, bigger titles that are coming out in the fall. We spoke of Assassin's Creed 3, which... Had more details coming out about the game that's set in the American Revolution. Comes out October 30th, and we spoke of BioShock Infinite that comes out 2 weeks before that. And interesting, I should point out that as I was watching a hockey game on television last night, I saw a commercial for Assassin's Creed 3.
Nice.
7 months before the game comes out, and they're showing a commercial. The only call to action was, you know, just go to the website and see the trailer. It wasn't pre-ordered now, it was just making sure it's in the minds of people from now. That's ridiculous. I've never seen that for a game before. But nevertheless, speaking of perhaps a game that I won't say is as AAA or as grand in scale as the Assassin's Creeds and Bioshocks of the world, but looks very interesting to me all the same. Coming out this summer from eccentric and eclectic video game designer and artist Suda51. It's his latest effort called Lollipop Chainsaw. And we spoke of it last year when it was first announced, and it's getting, or has received, a hard and fast release date coming out in North America on June 13th, I believe it is. 12th or 13th, one of those. Doesn't matter. It's the middle of June, all the same, when you can get your hands on Lollipop Chainsaw on the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. And the reason we're talking about Lollipop Chainsaw is that it looks completely insane.
Yes. Very, very insane.
Here's the premise of the game. You play 18-year-old, you know, blonde, you know, very bubbly cheerleader, Juliet. She goes to school one day when it's her 18th birthday and finds out that the school's been taken over by a zombie virus apocalypse. So then naturally, instead of running and hiding, she has the opposite reaction and decides to fight her way through. And she uses her cheerleading skills to fight through the hordes and also decides to slay them with her very appropriate chainsaw.
Yes, her heavily customized chainsaw, you know, emblazoned with hearts everywhere. And
I believe it's purple as well, with yes. stickers upon it. And if I recall, one of the other details from one of the videos I've seen of it, there's even like an iPod or MP3 stuck to it as well.
Yes. And she carries around her decapitated but still alive for some reason boyfriend.
Yes.
Who is not too happy about his situation. Who was bit by a zombie apparently, and the only way to save him was to chop his head off, or else, you know, he would have become a zombie. But she still lugs him around, and he talks and makes, you know,
pithy remarks.
Yes. The comic relief. The additional comic relief of the game, as if the character in and of herself was not comic relief enough, voiced by Tara Strong.
Ah, yes, well-known voiceover actress for cartoons and video games as well. She was most recently Harley Quinn in the latest Batman Arkham game.
Yes, but if I'm not mistaken, she was Angelica Pickles.
She sure was.
On Rugrats, a show from the past, which I hope I'm not dating myself too much by referencing, but I don't think it I don't think it's unknown to younger kids now, what with, you know, Nickelodeon still being on and that being a popular classic Nickelodeon show now.
I still think that Nickelodeon digs into the archives every once in a while and busts out a classic series such as Rugrats. Angelica Pickle, she was also on Powerpuff Girls.
Yes.
Amongst many others. It's very hard to find a piece of animated programming that Tara Strong has not been a part of. So it seems appropriate that she's the bubbly cheerleader, Juliet, and you just watched some gameplay video of the game earlier today, and it's not really as bubbly and uppity as you think it would be with a blonde cheerleader.
It's that weird mix. It's that, I can't even explain it. It's like watching like a black humor where it's like, it shouldn't be funny, but it's hilarious because it's so dark and inappropriate, because you're this bubbly, cheerleader, teenage girl in this horrifying, like, zombie apocalypse who's still like, you know, whatever about everything. And she's like, that totally sucks. And she's a valley girl and everything, and it's just ridiculous. And she's like, happy about everything that's going on still and just has a real positive outlook while she's chopping a zombie in half from the crotch up to the neck. Like, it's like, holy crap.
Yes, and if you weren't sure, this is not a puzzle game.
No, no. It's not a puzzle game, and it's not like Barbie's Horse Adventure. No, it's it's very, very M-rated.
It's a beat-em-up title.
I think it's a chop-em-up title, is what you could say, because your main weapon is a chainsaw, and it has the word chainsaw in the title. Again, Lollipop Chainsaw. It comes out June 12th.
June 12th, again, from Suda51, and I have to admit, and should admit, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a big Suda51 fan.
Yes.
And I'm very much looking forward to this. I'm one of the few people in this world who actually has both No More Heroes games on the Nintendo Wii and Killer 7. I find that one harder to play. But nonetheless, No More Heroes, awesome, on your Wii. It's not a blast from the past, but just have it.
Well, Killer 7 was good, too. But weirder to get into in a strange control scheme, but once you get into it, very good.
Very, very bizarre.
Very bizarre, yes.
Considering it's his first console effort.
Yes, well, first big entrance to the world as a game developer. It had a very odd set of characters, that's for sure.
Certainly did, but if you want to know what he's up to, get Lollipop Chainsaw. Pretty sure you will not be disappointed. And if you are, then you're just made of stone.
Yes, and you don't really get video games, I don't think. Because this looks like a very video game, if that makes sense.
It's every bit a video game as a video game could be.
Yes.
There we go. Oh, and I should point out, Juliet, the main character, she goes to San Romero High School. Romero. And there's zombies. If I have to spell it out for you, give your head a shake.
Yes.
There we go. So there is that to mark on your calendar. Again, June 12th, Lollipop Chainsaw. Get it. Support it. It will be awesome. But what is not awesome is the fact that we are plumb running out of time on this week's edition of The Arcade. While we still have a few moments left, how about we get to The Blast from the Past?
Indeed. This week, we're going to go back to the magical year of 2007.
Oh, those were crazy days, man.
It doesn't really seem that long ago until you realize, hey, that was actually 5 years ago, half a decade. Wow, where does time just keep going?
It's depressing when you put it in those terms.
But yes, 2007, which saw the release of this movie, which was, I think, at the time, the biggest video game-related movie, or at least very well-received video game-related movie at the time. And I'm not talking about Double Dragon or Mortal Kombat or any translation from video game to movie. It was a documentary I'm talking about that outlined the epic struggle between Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell. I'm talking about King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters.
Yes, charting the long-standing rivalry between the two for achieving the title of, or achieving the highest score possible in Donkey Kong.
Yes, well, it wasn't, I don't know if it really was a long-standing rivalry. It just kind of developed once Steve Wiebe just decided, yeah, I could probably do this. I have some downtime. And then he did it. And then kind of raised the ire of Billy Mitchell and
the previous record holder.
The previous record holder of, at that time, I think it was 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which, naturally, you know, kind of angering. It was two records. It was Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, I think Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. at the time were the only two score records, that Billy Mitchell had left, and Steve Wiebe kind of got rid of them. But they've since been kind of replaced by someone else, but
yeah.
Still.
The third, you know, horse that comes up the middle that you don't see and just obliterates them.
Yes.
But a very interesting documentary, just to see the stark contrast between their two approaches. Billy Mitchell, who holds on to those records for dear life, because those will be his noteworthy accomplishments with his life. Steve Wiebe, who just does it for the fun of it.
Yeah. Now, granted, they do make a point to paint Billy Mitchell in a very negative light in the movie. Now, is he actually like that in real life? I don't know. I'm inclined to believe he is, but I've only ever seen the movie and a couple of other videos on the internet, so my opinion may be skewed, but regardless, watch it if you haven't, if you like video games and like documentaries.
It's really interesting, and it's not just two guys who, you know, there's actual humanity and there's actual interest in watching them, you find. They're not just, you know, guys sitting in their basement. No, there's a story to tell there, and that's what this documentary does, and it's very good in doing that, and it's worth your viewing. You can find it on your online retail sites, get the DVD, or...
I believe it's still on Netflix. I don't think it was taken off yet, but...
That's how you saw it.
Yes, I saw it on Netflix. Hopefully it hasn't been taken off. But if it has, maybe write to the people in charge of Netflix and say, hey, I still want to watch that, and have them laugh at you. And then acquire the movie through other means, unfortunately.
Exactly. But, buy it online, of course.
And, of course, buy it online.
Support the project. And but all the same, watch it. King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, the documentary from 2007. So while you're doing that, we'll be busy preparing for next week's edition of The Arcade, because we are here every Friday night at 7 p.m., Sundays at 6 p.m., and you can always find this week's episode, next week's episode, and last week's episode on our website, thearcadeshow.com, and you can always email us, thearcade@kick.fm. So until next week, everybody, good night.
Good night.